And this is Rabbi Reuven Mann, and we're continuing the Shnayim Mikra with the third Aliyah, that Shlishi, which begins chapter 14, verse 15, through chapter 14, verse 25. The basic subject matter, we'll take the narrative first, is the story of the splitting of the Red Sea. We'll call it the Red Sea. In Hebrew, it's the Yam Suf. And Hashem issues the command to Moshe to raise his hand and stretch forth his hand over the sea and split it, so to speak. Of course, everything is being done by Hashem. It's just being done in accordance with the gesture of Moshe. But one should, of course, not have any thought that any human being has any type of supernatural power. All this is coming from Hashem. And the basic idea is that the Jews, it'll form dry land for the Jews. Then Hashem is telling him that I will harden the heart of Egypt, and they will chase after you. And I will be glorified through Paro and all of his army, and all of his horses and chariots. And Egypt will know that I am Hashem, when I am glorified through Paro and his horses and his chariots. This is a continuation of the theme we've been discussing. Clearly, the objective of everything that's happening is to make God's name known to the world, not only for the Jews, but for the Egyptians as well, for all of mankind. How important this idea is, that all of mankind, that's the mission of the Jewish people, to be the ones who teach mankind about Hashem. And that's why we have to be very, very concerned about our behaviors, about the way we live our lives and the way we teach and our wisdom, because that is the Mamlechas Kohanim. That is the kingdom of priests. As the Sforno explains, the teachers of mankind. And that's the sanctification of God. And to the contrary, heaven forbid, when Jews act in a manner which discredits Torah, so that's what's called a chilul Hashem, desecration of God's name. So that's something that always has to be in the forefront of our consciousness. The significance of this idea comes up again later on when the Jews sin with the golden calf, and Moshe has to intercede with God to plead not to destroy the Jews. The argument that he uses there, and subsequently in the case of the Meraglim, the argument that he uses, why will Egypt say? That Egypt will say that God couldn't finish the job, so to speak. That God took them out in order to kill them in the wilderness. And that's the argument which is effective in saving the Jews. Which is basically what Moshe is saying, is that the whole purpose of the Exodus and the setting up of the Jewish nation is to sanctify your name. So if these things were to come about, what would Egypt say? Egypt, of course, is not just Egypt, it's the rest of the world, it's mankind. So he's arguing that in order for God's name to be sanctified, the Jewish people cannot be destroyed at this point, even though they may be deserving of it. Then the Chumash describes the specifics of how this came about, that the angel of God that was before the camp of Israel, according to Rashi, it's a reference to the cloud. That normally the cloud by day would be replaced by the cloud of fire by night. In this case, the cloud formed a barrier between the two camps, so that the Jewish camp was protected, and also the pillar of light, which provided light for the Jewish people, was blocked, and the Egyptians were immersed in total darkness. That's the verse 20, that it came between the camp of Egypt and between the camp of the of Israel, and there was cloud and darkness, while it illuminated the night, that is for Israel, and the two camps were separate and apart. It's interesting that it goes into all of this detail, but It's important for us to realize also that the Egyptians were given every opportunity, even at this point, not to plunge into the sea. Had they realized, had they seen the divine hand, the darkness that descended upon them, that should have given them the opportunity to pause, to experience the fear, and even at this point in time, to turn back. But it's amazing that the wicked person plunges into his own destruction. Very important lessons to be learned on so many different levels. That it's not just the wicked person, but the Rambam makes this point in the Moreh Nevuchim, that considering the evils in this world, that people complain about so many different things. And the Rambam explains the various causes, but he says, by and large, the biggest cause of human suffering is the foolish activities that people themselves engage in, pursuing things that they don't really need, and engaging in foolish and reckless behaviors, not taking care of themselves, not taking care of their health, bringing tremendous suffering upon themselves. And when this happens, then they blame. They blame God. Why did you make the world this way? And so forth. Then it says that in verse 21 that Moshe stretched forth his hand and God brought about this tremendous wind, which had the effect of moving the waters with a strong east wind all through the night. Even when God is doing miracles, it's not like magic, puff, it's the sea is split. God uses other natural forces to demonstrate that he is in control. He's the master of all the natural forces. And he can take the waters of the sea and make it into a wall and dry land beneath it. So it goes into telling you that the way in which God brought about this change through powerful winds all night long that moved the waters. And the waters split. And then it says that the Bnei Yisrael went B'soch Hayam. They went in the middle of the sea on dry land. And the waters formed a wall for them on the right and on the left. It should be noted that this took a tremendous degree of faith on behalf of the Jews. When we read about it, or you see movies about it, so it seems easy. Oh, of course, you know, the waters are split, we could just go in there. But put yourself in that situation. You have these tremendous winds and the waters. You're walking into, imagine yourself, you're walking into the sea, and to the right of you and to the left of you, you see these walls of water. But any moment, it can come crashing down upon you. And to find the courage to go in, that too is based upon emunah, that's based upon faith. So that when the Jewish people were saved, part of it has to do with the fact that they did have the emunah to trust. True it is that the alternative was the Egyptians were at their back, no question. But still in all, it's a instruction. Everything that Hashem does for us and relates to us is to elevate us to a higher level, to have emunah in His word. Then it says that the Egyptians chased after them. They were not deterred. Right into the middle of the sea, they were still in a state of denial that this was a miracle from Hashem. They probably attributed it to natural causes, and indeed they may have seen it as a fortuitous circumstance for themselves. Then it describes the destruction, the first phases of the destruction of the Egyptian army, that God confounded them and removed the wheels of the chariots. And they can only move with great difficulty. So here too it would seem that it didn't happen that suddenly. That they could see that things were going badly for them. In fact, as we mentioned, by Yom Mitzrayim, at this point in time, they had that realization. Let me run away from Yisrael. They finally realized it. For God is fighting for them in Egypt. And in accordance with the Ibn Ezra's interpretation, which we mentioned in the second Aliyah, here too we see the goodness of God, the compassion of God, that even in dealing with the worst Rishayim, the worst wicked people, and even in the course of bringing about their destruction, opportunities are given for them to reconsider and to do tshuva. And even if it's too late to do anything in this world, if they do tshuva properly, then they can save their souls. I want to discuss a little bit this theme that we've been talking about. And the term is mentioned a number of times, that if viewed properly, the purpose of the splitting of the Red Sea was the glorification of God. That's mentioned twice in this parsha alone. In 17, the Kavda b'Faro, that God says, I'll be glorified through Paro and his army and chariots. And then the very next pasuk, it will lead to Yedia. All of Egypt will know that I am God when I'm glorified through Paro, his chariots, and his horses. What is the meaning of this idea? In what sense is God glorified by the destruction of Paro and his army? This is a major theme of the parsha, and as we'll see, it's brought out more significantly with regard to the parsha that talks about the Shira. If we go back to the beginning, chapter 14, verse 4, where Moshe is told of this idea, when Hashem first tells him to have the Jews go back to lure Paro out, the Kavda b'Faro. Again, I'll be glorified with Paro. Rashi explains the idea and says, Kesha HaKadosh Baruch Hu misnakeim b'rishayim, when God avenges the wicked, Shmo misgader l'miskabed, his name is made great and glorified. As we will discuss at greater length later on in the Parsha, specifically where it comes to the account of Amalek, it's a matter of great significance that the wicked people, that people who act wickedly, should not be triumphant. When this happens, it's a chilul Hashem. It's a desecration of the name of God. And as I said, we'll go into that in more detail. Conversely, when the wicked people are confronted, and when they're defeated, when they're destroyed, it's a great sanctification of the name of God. These ideas are not that popular today in the democracies, which have, in general, it seems, become much weaker in terms of even recognizing that there is such a thing as evil. I think one of the ideas of this parsha, clearly the ideas of the Resha, there is such a thing as wicked people, and there's such a thing as wickedness, and that there is an obligation on man to confront wickedness, to fight against evil. The fight against evil is not just a practical thing. That is, that obviously it is a necessity, because you just want to defend yourself. So that if somehow or other you could avoid the consequences by not fighting against it, by not destroying it, so then that would be the preference. To the contrary, as we'll see, it's a mitzvah to confront evil. It is a sin to allow evil to triumph. And the reason is that the sanctification of the name of God, from which I think it's fair to say that one can deduce that to the contrary, when the wicked triumph and nobody stands up against them, then the name of God is desecrated in the world. I just want to discuss something that's on my mind. And this is more, I guess, an opinion of mine. I invite your thoughts and your opinions on this. Perhaps the greatest desecration of God's name in history would be the Holocaust. When the Jews suffer specifically, it's bad enough when any kind of evil, wickedness triumphs in the world. Jews are concerned about all forms of wickedness, even if we're not the immediate victims, because we're opposed. Oh, Ave Hashem Sinu Ra, those who love God must hate evil. But certainly the worst is when the Jews are made to suffer, because that's what the people say. This is the people of God, and how could this be happening to them? And so on and so forth. It's what the church said through the centuries. Of course, they were responsible for much of the suffering that we endured. If that's the case, then one, aside from the sheer horror and destruction of the Holocaust, but it's also a time of tremendous Chil Hashem, that God's name is Mechulal, as the prophet says, amongst the Goyim. How could this happen to the Jewish people? So the question I want to ask is, well, what about the defeat of Hitler? Indeed, I know of a rabbi who made the point with reference to Noahides that although the Noahide is commanded in the seven, only seven mitzvos, but the Rambam says if he wants to take on another one and do it not in the sense that he has to, but simply voluntarily for the sake of the reward, he can do so. And an example was given that a great endeavor, for example, if a Noahide during World War II joined the army because he wanted to fight against Hitler, who was Amalek, then that would be a big mitzvah. So Hitler was defeated. Hitler was destroyed by a combination, by the Allies, Russia, the United States, England, and so forth. So would we say then that the defeat of Nazi Germany would constitute a Kiddush Hashem, a sanctification of God's name? There's no doubt in my mind that when he was ascendant, when he was victorious, prior to his defeat, the triumph of Hitler constitutes a Chil Hashem. There's no doubt in my mind about that. So thus the question is, what about the defeat of Hitler? It seems to me, I'm just giving my own opinion, that while the defeat of Hitler brings to an end, of course, obviously the benefits that he has destroyed, but I'm talking about from this standpoint, brings to an end the Chilul. So there's no longer any Chilul Hashem, desecration of God's name. But I'm not sure that it's a Kiddush Hashem. I'm not sure that it's a sanctification. The mere fact that a wicked person lost, was defeated, because the other side was superior, developed better weapons, he made military mistakes, he took on too much, and so on and so forth. In and of itself, I don't regard that as the sanctification of God's name. It's only a sanctification of God's name when that is the purpose for which they're fighting. When people arise and they're fighting in the name of God, and they're fighting against this because this is wickedness, and it's the denial of God, and that's what the enemy represents, then it's a triumph, because the victory gives credit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Indeed, if you read the Yom HaNisim by Hanukkah, it talks about the greatness of the victory. That is, you delivered the strong into the hands of the weak, the many into the hands of the few, the impure into the hands of the pure, the wicked into the hands of the righteous, and the wanton into the hands of the students of your Torah. That's the Kiddush Hashem. That is to say that those who are fighting because of the ideal of the existence of the Creator of the universe, and the correct way of life that Hashem endorses, and Hashem grants them the victory. That's a triumph of the true ideas, and that's what sanctifies Hashem's name. So it doesn't seem to me that the way World War II, certainly you had the Soviet Union, they were not righteous themselves. They were every bit as wicked as the other side, committed tremendous atrocities. So it was just a matter of circumstances. It was practical circumstances that they joined together with the Allies. Of course, the United States is, heaven forbid, is not a wicked, is a great nation, has been wonderful to the Jews. But there, too, the record is tainted. That's not what they were fighting for. They were not fighting against Hitler because of his wickedness. And they weren't fighting to affirm the rule of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the rule of God. So in my opinion, it's important to understand that. And that, of course, credit is given for defeating Hitler. But I don't think that that fulfills the category of the Kiddush Hashem, the sanctification of God's name, which we're reading about in the Parsha, the defeat of the Egyptians who denied God and were affirming the principle of their might, of their power, of their supremacy. And that was destroyed. And they themselves saw that it was a manifestation of the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the kavod of a pharaoh, the glorification of God through pharaoh.